coming to you live from inside the globe, perched high atop the Bugle Planet building in sunny Gotham City. It's Hey Kids Comics with two guys who are always ready to seduce the innocent, your hosts, Andrew Farmer and the Jedi Cole Houston. And now it's time for Hey Kids Comics.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Hey Kids Comics. Round two. Somebody rung the bell. We had a false start a second ago.
Yeah.
Somebody was off the line talking about some stuff.
Turns out that it was just a car backfiring. I didn't know they did that anymore.
That's one way to put it. Oh, man. We got a dumb doozy ring-a-ding-dong for you tonight. Butts to nuts. That's how we're doing it. Butts to nuts. I'm Andrew Farmer. With me, as always, the Jedi Cole Houston.
Good evening.
This is Hey Kids Comics.
It is. It truly.
Oh, tonight's going to be Hey Kids Comics. If there was ever a Hey Kids Comics to have, tonight is going to be a Hey Kids Comics to have. So tonight we're delving into one of Cole's issues, and I want to say this up front. I want to recognize that. That Cole did a great job putting together research for this this issue of Hey Kids Comics. Usually, you know, I put together a bunch of research. Cole jumps in and puts stuff. He's just busy. It's not that he doesn't want to or doesn't know how to research. He's just busy. But this time, I get this link, and I'm like, what's this? And I open it, and I'm like, holy
shit. Well, you know, it started out, like, with one website link.
Yes.
And then the next day, it was just a pile of cited examples of tonight's topic.
Well, see, what happened was, Cole, you laid the egg for this inside of the corpse of a podcast, and it incubated and burst forth to then infect a whole Google document. So
yes, it did, and now it is our job to hunt down and eviscerate that infestation.
And the scariest part about it is that we created the infestation solely so that we talk about creating.
This has become incredibly meta.
It has. Talk about creating the making yourself indispensable by creating a problem only you can solve. We created this problem, so we're going to have to versus ourselves tonight to destroy the problem. So, Cole, if that wasn't enough, yeah. What are we talking about tonight?
Well, if you aren't seeing this from the JCU site, where there's a lovely banner that was created to illustrate one of the key focuses, but not the sole focus of this particular issue. This is, of course, Hey Kids Comics number 280.
Shoosh.
V for Versus.
V for Versus.
And damn it if that didn't inspire another future issue that's coming up in like 2019.
One that we've needed to do.
Yes.
For 280 issues. So that's the problem with that. We find ones that are seminal that have slipped through the cracks all the time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's why we're now plotted into January 2021.
You're an insane man.
I am indeed.
You're an insane man.
This is my way of making sure this show never dies.
See, if it was
if this show dies, it's because one of us died. That's how it dies.
And it's not. It won't die. We would both. No. This is the what do they call what do they call it in this is the designated survivor. This is why I'm in Ohio and Cole's in Texas. Because we can't both be in the same place at the same time just in case something happens where we would both die and this podcast couldn't continue. So that's why we have a designated survivor scenario. Of course.
That's right.
It all makes sense now. We didn't just make that up.
this is, in fact, I got to thinking about some amazing comics over many, many years as a comic collector and fan where characters were pitted against one another. And the most intriguing were often the characters who wouldn't normally. I mean, if Hulk fights Wolverine, you expect Hulk is going to fight Wolverine.
Right.
About every 9 years.
Or months, depending on how badly they need ratings. Sales.
So, you expect this because Hulk and Wolverine share a common universe. If Hulk goes due north long enough, Wolverine's bound to cross paths with him.
It's true.
Or if we just need to make a quick buck.
That's right.
You know, 2 months earlier in previews where you see Wolverine versus Hulk coming in the next, you know, 2 months from now, you're on board immediately. But you don't expect, say, you know, say Starfire and Storm to face off, or Punisher and Batman.
Right.
Because they can't at will. It takes a concerted effort.
You can't be at a bar in the Yukon Tundra and have Captain America's motorcycle break down out front and walk in and fight Sabretooth, that way. I will say this to kind of back you up a little bit there. When those would happen, first of all, you're dating yourself pretty hard with previews. Just want to put that out there, make sure that you know.
Oh, well, you know, I was intimately involved with previews, having fondled many an issue as they arrived at the Diamond Warehouse.
That's true. But those crossovers, when they would happen, you know, nowadays you've got, like, Houdini and Sherlock Holmes fight the Ghostbusters.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It's like, what? Okay. Like, nothing is shocking
Why?
Anymore.
Yeah. It has become almost commonplace, especially with a lot of the indies, because if they can get a hold, especially like that, you know, when you get a combination of a licensed property that you hold a license to publish and the public domain.
Right. But
go for it.
20 years ago, that was a huge, huge deal.
Oh, absolutely.
When there was an interesting crossover.
Even longer ago than that, over 40 years ago, the first major cross-company crossovers, and which threatened for the longest to be the last, were massive tomes that were you would find in the grocery store. And I'm speaking, of course, of those gigantic, what they would call a treasury edition.
Right.
Back in the days before there were a lot of comic shops, and you would find them in the grocery stores, they're the only ones who had a damn newsstand big enough to house them. These things are colossi.
They stride mightily across the landscape. So, like, what were – I know I remember them, but I don't remember them. Like, what were some of the winners there?
Well, I remember being very curious about – I think I may have actually seen this on the newsstand, as it were, about a gigantic comic featuring Batman versus the Incredible Hulk. And I couldn't help but think, what a one-sided argument. This is like my VW versus an oncoming freight train. I mean, I'll put a brave face on it, but there's just going to be disaster.
Well, and we always say that Batman can win any fight given enough time to prepare. You can't prepare for something that isn't even in your universe, not even your multiverse, but in your even – there was no preparation could prepare you for that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is like Blockbuster on steroids for Batman.
It's also like Blockbuster on steroids if Blockbuster was the movie rental place.
Oh, that's so true.
So yeah, those – I remember those being a big deal, but I also don't remember having them. They were a little before my time.
Yeah, there was also Spider-Man or Superman versus the Amazing Spider-Man. And I guess DC must have initiated these because they got top billing both times.
Oh, really? That's awesome. Oh, yeah, I'm remembering these. I just pulled them up.
Okay, yeah, there you go. So, you know, these were really very clever kind of crossovers, and for the longest, they were the only ones of their kind. And, you know, over time, the two companies found some common ground, published a really clever, fun, I mentioned it earlier, Teen Titans and X-Men.
That was a really good book
because it also pretended like they were in a shared universe. Unlike JLA Avengers, where they had to cross over between each other's universes, there were actual just little bits of exposition that suggested that, say, Garth Logan, a.k.a. Changeling, was aware of something that had happened in a past issue of X-Men.
Right, Right. And God forbid it be the DC versus Marvel, where they needed the, what was the guy's name? We've talked about him before. The invention solely for that.
Oh, yes. Was it not conduit, but,
yeah, cardboard boxy,
yeah, gasket man,
whatever his name was, that,
yeah,
that led to Amalgam Comics, which was the first just slash fiction, official slash. I blame Amalgam Comics for a lot, all right, for so much. I'm glad that that wasn't a thing that continued. I'm glad that capitalism stopped that in its tracks, because that was god awful.
Yeah, that that just became such a circus. I mean, to the point where there were posters and voting and the whole nine yards.
Oh,
it was
God, yeah.
Crazy. And a lot of derision. or divisive camps. I mean, we wouldn't see this level of fanboy divisiveness until Team Edward and Team Jim Bob, or whatever the fuck his name was.
Jacob, you were actually pretty close.
I got it. The J.
You got the right
off.
Amount of syllables.
I got the beginning and the
Jacob,
end. I can't.
Jim Bob. Okay, that was all right. All right. I don't know how you got that close, like phonetically, like universally close, without getting any. You couldn't have gotten closer yet further away. I'm really proud of you for that. That was great. But there, okay. So Cole, there is one thing as we get close to what you, you know, the purpose, the dovetail of this issue. There is one comic I do want to talk about, okay, and it's a comic that we have talked about on this show before, and I think that it really set a precedent for the idea that properties or entities outside of comics can impact comic books. Because up until this point, I don't remember seeing very many, and we've talked about this, there have been presidents and things like that, but they don't play a major role in the book itself.
Yeah.
But in 78, a comic was released that changed all of that. A comic by Denny O'Neil and Neil Adams. A comic that has been drugged through the mud and the fire on this very show, on an issue of Super Sports Balls by Eddie Medina, talking about the Kirby Crackle, Superman versus Muhammad Ali.
Well, yeah, I guess, and you can't talk about this sort of thing without bringing that up, because it too was a Treasury edition.
It had Star Warriors, Cole. Do you have Star Warriors? You don't have Star Warriors.
I don't have Star Warriors.
You're a liar. You don't have Star Warriors, coward. I don't know. I don't know.
The hell?
I don't know. But yes, it was a Treasury edition. It was a big-ass book is what it was.
And this was one of the more unique things, because it brought the real world into comics for the first time. And, of course, many, many years later, actual celebrity comic books.
Oh,
I can cite the god awful, I believe it was hardcover, trade edition one shot, Sir Charles Barkley and the Referee Murders. There are people who have that on their shelf who are kind of blushing.
I want it.
Right now, yes. Charles Barkley and the Referee Murders, with Charles Barkley dressed as Dick Tracy.
If you're out there and you want to get me a birthday present, look no further than Charles Barkley and the Referee Murders. By the way, why the hell have we not talked about Charles Barkley, the goddamn Referee Murders, during a Super Sports Ball?
I don't know how that – I think it got overshadowed by all that – who was
racism?
It?
Is that what you're looking for?
Not precisely. Okay. No, I was heading more in the direction of Yao.
Well,
the whole Godzilla.
Yeah. Yeah, where he no, it was Barkley, wasn't it? It wasn't Shaq, or
yeah.
No, it was Shaq.
No, was it Shaq or Barkley?
Barkley or Shaq? One of the two did.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to, you know, when you got the King of the Monsters in the mix, it's hard to remember the damn. Who was it that put that out?
He solved murders, though. That's important.
Hampton Comics.
Hampton Comics.
You know, God, what? Where are you now, Hampton Comics. Speak to us from the grave.
The reason I bring that up is because, you know, up to that point, from my recollection, you didn't have a lot. You had your, like, we've talked about your toy lines and your kind of TV stuff that they made comics of.
Yeah.
But you didn't have a lot of this established comic book character interacting with this in a meaningful way, almost like a weird Bechdel test, where you would have, like, Jimmy Carter, like, eating a peanut in one panel of a comic, and then that was it for Jimmy Carter. You wouldn't see, you know.
Yeah, you might see, like, I believe Carter actually, it was his official executive pen that gave pardon to the Incredible Hulk.
I think you're right. But
these things were rare.
Well, not only were they rare, but they never. It was never meaningful. It never had an impact the way that I think Muhammad Ali's Superman did.
Yeah.
And that leads us into, I think, what you were, the whole crux of the show, which is just one of the coolest ideas to, I think, ever come from comics, at least in the last 20 years, that gave us so much.
Yes, indeed. Well, you know, there, like I said, there have always been, you know, for anyone who's really pedantic out there, there are always those crossovers, those this versus that type of storylines and arcs and what have you. But there was one event in the history of comics that for about a decade rocked heavily through the industry. You know, it opened a floodgate that took close to a decade to stave off. And still, you know, every now and again, they'll open the gates as needed, you know, in case, you know, the rivers are low or what have you.
but somebody
needs a quick buck.
I guess my argument here is, I don't think they needed to close those floodgates. There's a lot of floodgates out there that need to be closed in comics. I'll be the first to admit that. This was a pretty good floodgate to have open.
Well, and if you're going to open the floodgates, open them right. And this did it.
Yes, I agree with that.
I really look upon this as one of the greatest examples of a comic book done right, especially in the case of a licensed comic.
There we go.
A double licensed comic.
Sometimes a triple licensed comic.
So let's go back in the Wayback Machine, Shaman.
Ah.
Okay, Mr. Peabody. We're going to go all the way back to 1989.
I don't call you Mr. Peabody anymore. There's still a lawsuit pending on that.
I know. All right, but we're going to go back to 1989, and there was a what was described in this text that I'm borrowing heavily from and will probably not only paraphrase but actually quote. This is from an article by Randy Stradley in the back of a collected edition of the very book that inspired this for us. Basically, he talks about how there was a Dark Horse Bull session with Mike Richardson, the maverick publisher of Dark Horse Comics, who, you know, when Dark Horse was launched, that was a huge gamble.
They were the first.
And it paid off because they wind up to this day having tremendous market share, which looks like a tiny little, oh, no, I'm dieting. No, smaller kind of slice of pie. But when you consider that the slightly larger slices of pie or slice of pie next to this or, you know, nearby represents 250 to 350 publishers.
Right.
That is a diet derailing slice of pie. But what I'm getting at here is during this bull session, they were there was a potential cross-company crossover between Dark Horse and another company, which isn't cited in this text. But everybody was kicking around, you know, which characters should we bring from our universe and theirs. And a lot of stuff was being fielded on these character versus character suggestions. And then as one does, you get a bunch of creators together, and eventually, as it says here in the text, we've gotten down to something like Roachmill versus the Flaming Carrot.
Jeez.
When Chris Warner said, Aliens versus Predator.
That's huge. Such a huge idea.
It talks about how stunned silence would follow, how this seemed like the single most obvious crossover in the world, considering Dark Horse was a license holder for both properties and were in the midst of publishing comics based on said properties.
They got Martha'd.
Why had this never occurred to anyone?
They got Martha'd, man. That's what happened.
Yeah, they did. They got Martha'd. They sure as hell did. Aliens versus Predator. Why'd you say that? Why did you say Aliens versus Predator?
Ripley. Ripley. Why do you want a Ripley?
Why did you say Dutch and Ripley? Did I get that right? Is there Dutch?
There's a Dutch. Dutch, okay. Dutch is Schwarzenegger.
Okay, well, hey.
God, what is happening to you today? I've never seen the damn thing. What is happening to you? I don't know what's happening to you.
I just got Dutched.
You just got Dutched. Get to the chopper. There aren't enough of those jokes yet, by the way.
We're going
to
go Dutch.
We're going to go Dutch. Why wasn't that a joke?
I
Why
know.
Why wasn't that a yes, joke?
Lord. Because I just got Martha'd.
Yeah. Why?
Decades later.
I love that. Can I say that I love that this impression is turning into Bernie Sanders?
Balloon drop.
We're going to go get to the chopper. Can you do Bernie Sanders saying get to the chopper?
Get to that chopper. Oh, God, I don't know what that was.
I don't know what that was either.
But it was beautiful. I want to hear it. That's like one of those voices that went out of style in the 30s.
I don't even know. That was a trained voice. Are you a medium now? Did I miss something? Are you an old-timey medium? When did that happen?
Old-timey. Okay. But needless to say, what this did was set off, for one thing, the world of comics was treated to an amazing concept, and that is Aliens versus Predator. It immediately captured the imagination of fans of both franchises, or even just a single one of the two. In my case, and they had quietly been teasing the thing in Dark Horse Presents with short vignettes that set up how all of the events come into being. You see like a company ship getting buzzed by a predator ship, and then the big reveal that the predators have an alien queen in captivity.
I think for me, so that's cool, right? That they were in a meeting and you know, spitballing, and somebody was like, I'm an idiot. We're idiots. Everybody at this table is an idiot. Alien versus Predator. And everybody's just like, holy shit. Stop the presses. Who's that? Vicky Vale. But I think that even cooler for me is that as fanboys, and you'll attest to this, because we've had 1,000 conversations about comic book characters and what we think they should do with them and where they should go. And we've listened to this show, you know, underplayed comic book characters that aren't used. You know, Cole and I have hot takes on just about everything. But I never heard up until that point any fan of comics say, why aren't they putting Alien and Predator together? So when this hits, it has this shockwave effect, because nobody – I'm sure there are people that had postulated that this would be a cool thing, right? But nobody, but the mass majority of fans had never put it together. It hits, boom, and everybody's just like, holy shit, why? That is such a brilliant idea. And that is a cool effect to see in comics with all these jaded assholes out here.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, that's all right. But the thing about it is, this could have been – they have the rights to these two properties. There are probably some studio restrictions like, you know, don't embarrass us.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, as a publisher, we've seen so many properties where you're just like, why? Why did you do that? You had the potential, such amazing potential, and this is what you chose to do with it. But with Aliens vs. Predator, and I will stand firm on this, you get a story that is practically a film. I wish this had been Aliens vs. Predator on screen. I wish they had adapted this instead of doing the god-awful, just the dreadful stuff that they went with.
Right. It was bad.
At every turn. I was turned off to the franchise, to the Versus franchise after the first one. That's pretty much how bad it is.
Right.
But this, if you too were turned off to the Aliens vs. Predator franchise and have never read Dark Horse's Aliens vs. Predator, and I'm talking about the first one, there's like 50 or 60 of them. Now, there's like, you know, Aliens vs. Predator War and Aliens vs. Predator More Aliens and More Predator.
Yeah,
there's like Aliens vs. Predator with sugar on top. I mean, it just goes on and on. But the original one reads like a damned movie. It has well-developed principal characters as well as a brilliant supporting cast, a very strong female lead, tough-as-nails characters that are very surprising, and it has all of the elements you expect out of an alien franchise, the most glaring of which is a persistent sense of greed.
Oh, yeah.
Greed drives most of the disasters that occur. And on the Predator side, you get a wonderful glimpse into the Predator culture and a kind of stacking the deck, if you will, when it comes to hunting. It's kind of like one of those hunting preserves, you know, where you stock it with all kinds of animals that aren't indigenous to your country so that yahoos can go out and blow them away.
Sure. They're the Alan Quartermains of alien species.
But, I mean, top to bottom, beginning to end, it is a viable cinematic
experience.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Now, it's a super cool concept, Cole. And out of this idea, not like you said, there are a million Alien vs. Predator comics that come out of this. Literally, God, I don't even – 30? And somewhere between 20 and 30, easy.
I believe so, yeah, because the franchise was far more successful in comics.
Oh, yeah. Well, it makes sense in comics, right? The thing about a movie that's stupid is you have to make it – you have to put it into the perspective of a person in order for them to think it's going to sell.
Yeah.
So you have to have a human being, whether it be a Gary Busey cop or, you know, some person that lives in a small town, some small town sheriff. You've got to, you know, you have to flip the script so that a person is the central focus. You don't have to do that in these. You have aliens, you have predators, go for it. Like,
but it could have been as simple as that.
It could have been.
And they chose to give you a viable story.
Right. I'm not saying it couldn't have been without it, but that's what they never got, was that if you created a mythology, and they have started to create that mythology around Alien vs. Predator, something that it took Dark Horse a year to do has taken how long to create? I mean, you had two amazing movies from Jump Street. You had a Predator movie starring Schwarzenegger where he went to Vietnam. I think it was Vietnam. It might have been Laos hunted a bunch of like badass commandos. And then on the flip side, you had these great alien movies where, you know, you had a mythology built. You take that mythology and you combine it and you make amazing movies that people want to see. You don't do whatever you did.
I think they really missed out greatly because Dark Horse effectively handed them a franchise in Hollywood, and I misinterpreted where you were going there. But...
Oh, okay, sorry.
Oh, that's all right. We're on board here now.
But what also came out of the wake of this, for me, equally as important, is the idea that then you can take these two characters, they were so cool and so popular and sold so well, that then you could take the Alien vs. Predator franchise and start pulling these other disparate threads into it, whether they be from Dark Horse or other publishers, and all of a sudden you had the primordial ooze, the basic building blocks of a good story, to just do to run rampant and do the most weird, amazing things and test your moral center and test survivability to really put that idea of humanity to the test. Like, it just became insane.
Absolutely.
So where is your favorite of these? Where do you start with these? Where do you finish with these, I guess, is my question for you.
Yeah, I think that where we need to look first, where we need to head first in the midst of all this, is how this sort of touched off. It was sort of like the flame to the powder keg.
Yeah.
Because what follows is an explosion of some very clever, very good verses, and some just god-awful cash grabs.
Sure.
But anyone who had a property in their midst was jumping all over this. Because that was now a thing. The proof of concept had been made.
Right.
And
right.
American comic readers were hungry for more, as far as anyone knew. And it's sort of borne out.
Oh, yeah.
And early on, it seemed like almost like there was a mandate to give quality. And I think a lot of times it came from which publisher are we talking about. In 1992, for example, Dark Horse tries to catch lightning in a bottle a second time with RoboCop versus Terminator.
Listen. Upon reading the synopsis for RoboCop versus Terminator, I want that shit to happen as a movie, because it's
insane.
Well, let
me tell you, this is an example of where quality set in, because who do they hire to write this? This potential cesspool of a crossover? They hired none other than Frank Miller to meld these two universes in a very sensible way. And then they get Walt frickin' Simonson.
Right.
To do the art. You cannot go wrong. Because they took what on the surface could sound like a completely ridiculous crossover and turned it into something actually fairly remarkable, as I recall.
It looks amazing. Like, the story is amazing. And yes, you gave it to Frank Miller, and for all of Frank Miller's insane faults, he said, all right, hyperviolence is my jam. I got some sticks here. I can walk this thing. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna have the Terminators obviously are from the future.
Yeah.
RoboCop is from theoretically the now. Maybe a little bit in the future.
We're probably on the verge of catching up at this point.
Right. So what I'm gonna say is that some of the stuff that runs the RoboCop is early Skynet. So that's going to be like the stuff that the part of the AI that they used to create Skynet was built into RoboCop. It was proto-Skynet. Well,
exactly.
Guys are going to kill RoboCop, so we got to send Terminators back to protect RoboCop. Then RoboCop's human part figures out what's going on and says, F that noise, and he's going to go try to destroy Skynet through the, you know, through whatever time travel device. And my favorite weird shit that I read was that in order to time travel, keeping up with, by the way, the mythology of Terminator, in order to time, you can't time travel metal. You've got to have skin.
Yeah, it has to be sheathed in flesh.
So he just wraps himself in what they refer to as a blob of flesh and uses the blob of flesh to time travel into the future.
Yeah, well, as I recall, what he did was, and I hope this isn't a spoiler, is that he stole big bags of liposuction fat from a liposuction clinic, made that into soap to finance the making of the... That was RoboCop versus Fight Club. I get those two
RoboCop
confused.
Company.
Yeah, that was RoboCop versus Tyler Durden.
Here's a spoiler. RoboCop was Tyler Durden.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. First rule of RoboCop is you don't talk about RoboCop.
Second rule is dead or alive, you're coming with me.
Third rule is I'd buy that for a dollar.
God, I would too.
I would absolutely buy RoboCop versus Tyler Durden for like $3. I would spend $3 on it. But that was the most, that was like the crazy shit you could get away with now. It's like things like RoboCop versus Terminator, or one that people were begging for and they said, because what this did now is it set a precedent that allowed you to take fanboy dreams and make them come true.
Because yes, they were truly doing God's work, not always well, but, you know.
No, they were. So you got things like the one that I remember from my generation was absolutely the most asked for thing, right? After the Predator-Alien crossover, it was the movie that would never happen that happened in comics, Freddy versus Jason versus – or Ash versus Jason versus Freddy.
Yes.
Was the one that everybody was losing their minds over, because when Freddy versus Jason came out, they thought Ash was going to be in it, but he was, you know, there's a whole thing. Everybody was losing their minds, but they made it into a comic because you can do that. You can do that. You can just you let yourself go nuts. Pay the licensing fee and go crazy and make your money back.
Exactly.
Super, well, super excited.
Well, and then, you know, what there was already an established relationship between DC and Dark Horse.
Oh, yes.
They'd done some crossovers before. There was, I don't know where this falls in the timing corridor, but there was a Lobo versus the Mask.
Yes.
Which seemed like, you know, a perfect combo there, an obvious, not much of a stretch. But I remember, you know, speaking of things that the fanboys lost their shit over, Batman versus Predator. Everybody wanted Batman versus Predator, even before there was a fan film. And again, this was an example of one that was pretty decent. And then it seemed like DC and Dark Horse said, okay, we've got one property down. We've got to go with our other figurehead property, Superman versus Aliens, which seemed to be like, why? Is he going to fight them in the ring under Red Sun conditions like he did with Ali? What are we trying to achieve here?
Sure.
It turned out that it was a kind of a Superman story that took place outside of the DC universe.
Okay.
And it was actually a pretty neat little story.
Okay.
It was sort of like Superman fighting himself in an alien's universe type of thing, and being instrumental in the survival of the characters or something along those lines. It has been 20 some odd years, but it actually was a kind of an eyebrow raiser in that it was somebody figured out a way to make that happen. But then versus inflation begins to set in. And I in all fairness, I have not read most of these, if any. But JLA versus Predator.
Yeah, that seems like, again, overkill, right? Like,
and then there was Green Lantern versus Aliens.
Green Lantern versus Aliens was actually I will defend that book.
Okay.
Because for my money, it makes the most sense, right? You got
that's true. Being spacefaring and all.
You got a space. You got a space force, a space police force out there. You've established that these aliens exist in the DC universe, right? Essentially, you've got Batmans and Supermans and Justice Leagues and all that. The idea was that one of the Green Lanterns, Hal gets a distress call from one of the Green Lanterns, Green Lantern down, and he goes to investigate and he finds the planet, and the planet is essentially infested with aliens. They find the Green Lantern, the Green Lantern's chest is burst open, he's done, but he finds the aliens. Well, the problem is, he could destroy them, but they aren't evil. They're doing what they were, as we find out from Aliens vs. Predator, no spoilers here, but they were doing what they were kind of bred to do, which is just kill, you know, propagate the species. So Hal doesn't kill them. Hal takes them, cages them, takes them back to Mogo, and eventually the inevitable happens and they get out and they start infesting Mogo. and then the it has to be handled. But it's a really the one thing I'll say that's cool about that book is you get the claustrophobic dread that you get from an Aliens movie in a Green Lantern comic book, which you don't get very often in a Green Lantern comic book. Usually it's pretty cut and dry. So I'll defend that one. That one I'll defend.
All right.
There's some in there that I can't defend, but that one I will defend. Aliens Vampirella I have an issue with, but Green Lantern.
Yeah. And then I was reading over some information on another Dark Horse opus, Aliens versus Predator versus the Terminator.
God, that's so confusing. I was trying to read it. I was really trying to read it, and it was so confusing, I don't even know where to begin. Like, were they Predators? Were they not Predators? Or were they Terminators or not Terminators? Or what was the deal with, you know, I was having issues following. Even
yeah, and it seems like they're trying to cram as much stuff in as possible with Ripley and Call from Alien Resurrection in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
Mentions of John Connor.
Yeah, yeah.
Skynet, it's just everything.
It's in the future, and this happens, and that happens. And I'm like, what is going on here? I'm very unclear as to what's going on. But yeah, there were some winners, though. There were, for all the losers, I feel like there's a couple that I think we need to talk about.
Well, there's some that, you know, really are worthy of little more than a passing mention.
Sure.
A.K.A. the losers.
Also Rans.
That I think it's important we, you know, go acknowledge that their existence.
Hit them up.
What was there was one that was like, oh crap! Now I'm drawing a blank. Oh, here we go. There were a lot. Image got in the game for a while.
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Oh yes, my favorite, just cluster, Witchblade, Aliens, Darkness, Predator. Mindhunter.
It's a lot going on there.
Yeah, after four title franchises, you have to have a title for this damn thing?
Overkill, Witchblade, Aliens, Darkness, Predator. That was another one. That's a whole nother one. Yeah, you don't need it. Like, Wildcats, Aliens. Pretty cut and dry. Yeah, what was the other one that was Image? There was Wildcats, Aliens. There was there's the Witchblades. All of those. I thought there was another.
Oh, Alien. There was one that was Topps Trading Cards. Their old 50s classic Mars Attacks, which would gain the periodic resurgence until it became a feature film, and then Topps began publishing comics, most of which were really bad Mars Attacks series. Mars Attacks Image.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so apparently, you know, the Martians came and wholesale slaughter ensues, I guess, as one would expect, and in the Imageverse.
Wow. If you would. Is it, well, I mean, yeah, all right, sure. I'll allow it, I guess. I do like that it's Mars Attacks, but I think that, you know, there are a couple that one of the regular crossing over franchises in this world was none other than Judge Dredd.
Oh, yeah. In fact, just as you were about to say that, I stumbled on Judge Dredd, RoboCop, Terminator, Aliens, Predator.
Right. Judge Dredd, RoboCop, Terminator, Aliens, Predator. That's all.
That's like something you would see on a fan comic website or something.
That's all in. There's no question that that's everything that you could possibly ever shove into one comic. But the straight-up Judge Dredds, the Judge Dredd versus Alien or the Judge Dredd versus Predator, pretty solid book. I mean, they really were the Predator versus Dredd versus Aliens, right? So the way that a lot of these work is Aliens and Predators have been fighting each other for generations, and At the end of the day, we just keep getting mixed up in it. And Judge Dredd gets mixed up in it. They hit Mega City, and Judge Dredd says, not on my watch. And yeah. Gets facehuggered. That's the end, but it's still pretty cool because it's Dredd. So I'll give that a pass.
What about, I just stumbled on this one as well, and I thought I was being pretty pretty concise in my digging around and finding things, but there was a Superman versus Terminator.
I did not know that. There was a Superman versus Terminator book, huh?
Oh, yes. And there was apparently a Dynamite took a page from Dark Horse and apparently did a Terminator RoboCop.
Oh, the reverse?
Yeah.
What? Death to the Future.
Yes.
There it
Death
is.
Death to the Future. Holy yeah, shit. That's the one.
Holy shit. There it is. Look at this. Oh, no. No, come on. Hey, oh, of course. Of course. What was his? The Eradicator had to make an appearance.
Of course.
Of course he did. The last, the
artifact
Superman.
Of Krypton. Yes, the surviving Kryptonian artifact. And was there? Oh my gosh! I'm suddenly wondering if something happened. Oh, I remember it now.
Okay.
Oh my gosh! This one, it wasn't a versus per se because it wasn't, you know, titled that way. Manny Patinkin and crap. Who was it? Alien Nation. Trying to remember his co-star, and then became a television series.
You're talking about, but you are talking about Alien Nation, right?
Yeah, Alien Nation. It became a comic at one publisher. I'm trying to rack my brain who it was, who also had another property, an old classic property that was between revivals. So they went with the original incarnation.
Okay.
That awful Planet of the Apes.
Oh, no.
And they brought you Choke, Ape Nation.
Oh, that hurts inside.
Does that not just...
This almost needs to spawn another show. We're just talking about the most ridiculous comic book crossovers that are out there. Because Ape Nation, I remember it, too.
I just suddenly
that shit in my brain.
Floated back up to the top, and I'm like, oh my god.
I can see it in my brain right now. Damn it.
Is this for reals?
Oh no.
Is this a thing?
Oh no. What'd you find?
I'm not sure. I found an article.
I love our shows, and I don't mean this sardonically. I love the shows that we have where we just start doing research during the show and
yeah,
weird shit that we didn't know existed. Like, is this real? Is this a real thing?
Okay, apparently this is real. Apparently,
okay.
Or somebody was being so precise in their fake covers that they realized that a damn comic is $3.99 now?
Oh, yeah. Easy.
Holy shit. This 6-issue miniseries is going to set you back some change.
Okay.
Injustice versus Masters of the Universe.
Yes, that is, DC and Masters of the Universe have absolutely crossed over in a big ass way.
That's up there with Singing Prince Adam, I'm telling you.
It does. It is, isn't it? And the art is it wasn't Jeff Loeb who did the art. Let's not forget.
Yeah. Williams II is cited on the cover.
But let's not also forget that one of the things that's happened in the last, one of the things that happened in the last, like, year and a half was the Warner Brothers cartoons have crossed over with DC's comics proper.
Ah.
And also, don't forget, we have He-Man Thundercats in this mix, too, dog.
Oh, wow. I didn't know about that one.
Oh, God.
But, yeah, we need to, before we run out of time, talk about some of the good stuff.
There's two that we really need to talk about. But, okay, I'm putting it on the table now. I don't care if it puts us out till 2085. I don't care if it puts us out till RoboCop busts out of my studio wearing a meat suit so that he can tell me to stop. We're going to do the weirdest crossover episode of this show.
Right.
So make
yes.
sure we note that. Okay. All right, now that that's been noted, let's continue.
All right. Yeah. Very somewhere probably between 2020 and 2021. Jesus. Look for Cross Purposes.
Oh my God.
Our crossover episode.
That's insane.
Heard it here first.
That's insane.
Just writing that down right now.
Cross Purposes. That's a good one. I give you that. That's a good title off the top of your head, buddy.
All right. Well, let's get on to something we hope you'll really like.
All right. So there's one that I know I want to talk about, and I know there's one you absolutely want to talk about.
Oh, yes.
The one that I want to talk about for show is near and dear to my heart. Probably the weirdest, most interesting crossover when it comes to the stuff that I found. And I hope I'm not stepping on any toes here. But that would be Archie versus Predator.
I came across that in my research, and I was...
Holy cow.
I mean, not since Punisher went after the gang at Riverdale.
Yeah. Yeah. So the whole conceit is that they go on vacation, and a Predator ship crash lands on their little island resort vacation. And it's quickly identified that it's a, I believe it was referred to as a teen predator. So like, oh yeah, that's a teen predator. Because it has to be, right?
Oh, okay. So he like jacked up the ship and took it for a joyride and crashed Dad's car.
Right. The predator then after spring break follows them back to Riverdale and fucking kills everybody. And it's not a, if you're looking at the comic, it's not a more recent like after death of afterlife of Archie. It's like double digest style art and Predator just ripping them apart, methodically goes through Veronica, goes through Jughead, goes through Betty, ends up killing Archie, I'm sorry, Veronica recovers, and they have a healing machine that Veronica has in her manor. I don't know, it's an Archie comic, deal with it. And they take the Predator and turn him into an Archie lookalike, so the Predator now is an Archie lookalike. So here's my thing, is has everything that we know about Archie from that point on just a predator in disguise? do we need to talk about that? Is that a fan theory that we really need to get into? All right. That's my shtick. So what do you have, man?
Well, you know, you brought back to my thoughts there, because I've been all over the map tonight. Dark Horse ages ago published a unique crossover event using some of their disparate. This was in 1997.
Okay.
So over 20 years. Good Lord. It's getting old.
feeling it.
One of my all-time favorite characters in popular culture ever is none other than... Crap, I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Your favorite character?
No, on his actual name.
Oh, Richard Greystoke.
John?
God damn, what is happening to us? We are devolving in front of you guys. This is insane.
Yeah, it's because, well, hell. Now, I want to get this right here.
Lord.
Yeah, John Clayton II.
Oh.
Lord Greystoke.
Okay.
A.K.A. Tarzan of the Apes. Which I highly recommend, if nothing else, get a copy of the very first story to ever introduce this character by Edgar Rice Burroughs, Tarzan of the Apes, because it will turn on your ear every concept. Everything you thought you knew about Tarzan is wrong. And at intervals, someone comes desperately close to getting it right, but nobody, I don't know why everyone is so terrified of this character. Except for Dark Horse, where they show due reverence by giving us a non-monosyllabic Tarzan. This isn't the Tonto Tarzan and Frankenstein Tarzan. This is the Tarzan that Edgar Rice Burroughs created.
Right.
Who speaks perfect English. He's an English lord, for God's sake. He's a gentleman who likes to go out in the jungle and strip naked and hunt for wild animals with a knife. And
I was reading one of the, and I'm not going to get into the spoilers for it, but I was reading one of the synopses for this, and I heard what was a really good analogy, or I guess explanation for who he is. He's a gentleman, right? He's a lord. He's a landowner. He's a title holder, you know, but because
he has an estate in London, in England, and he also has this gigantic ranch in Africa that periodically Germans or the warriors from Opar or some other enemy will come through and burn to the ground.
And he has to go, and that starts,
Oh, God, then the murder machine is set loose.
Well, but that's what they were saying, right, is that he has access to the animal part of his brain that most of us don't. So all it takes, he can flip that switch, and then it's on. But he's not like
red
that
scar on his forehead opens up that he got from fighting Bulgani the gorilla in his childhood, and I'm too steeped in Tarzan.
But that's the part that most people don't understand. When they think Tarzan, they think he's 24/7 me Tarzan you Jane, and in reality, it's no. He's got the top hat and the gloves and the whole nine yards and the Rolls Royce or whatever he was, you know, whatever they had. But when shit goes down, the switch gets flipped. Man has a buck knife and a vine. He gonna fuck you up. That's what it is.
He will hunt you across the width and breadth of the Dark Continent.
Right. Speaking of.
And if you're lucky, if you're extremely lucky, he will just slit your throat.
Right, right.
Otherwise, he will go and, like, you know, tie you over on a rickety branch over a pool of hungry crocodiles.
Right,
tantalizingly out of reach. But the dry season's here, so that branch ain't going to last long.
Or the tide's going to come in during
the swell. Yeah, there's going to be some extenuating circumstances that eventually nature will take its course, and you will be dead, but you're not going to have enjoyed a peaceful, make-it-quick kind of death.
Right. But so, what are we talking about here? Because we are talking about...
Oh, yeah. I guess I should say the versus. This is Tarzan versus Predator, which you could stop there. That works. I mean, Tarzan is Predator prey material. That's what they want.
Yeah.
They want the guy that can go out and, like, put a gorilla in a half Nelson and make him and become the king of that tribe. Like, he's not already king of every other tribe.
Right.
Plus the king of the Wazuri, plus the king of God knows how many fictional, non-existent tribes of weird-ass creatures that were all over Burroughs, Africa. Oh, no. Then he has to go to the goddamn center of the earth and become king of every goddamn thing down there, too.
This is mine now. Hey.
And for those of you who are X-Men fans who are steeped in X lore and think that the Savage Land is pretty fucking cool, Burroughs beat the X-Men by about half a century minimum.
Right.
And that's why you get Tarzan versus Predator at the Earth's core. He goes to Pellucidar, the bizarre-ass world in the center of the Earth, where it's like an inverted Earth where the horizon folds back on itself, and there's a giant constant noonday sun hovering in the middle of effectively a world on the inside of a sphere.
Yes. Yeah. Y'all out there talking about your flat earth, let's talk about Pellucidar.
Yeah. That's where I want to go. And there's like dinosaurs and shit and pirates and weird ass psychic or psionic pterodactyl people and primitive savages and semi-advanced civilizations, and a couple of guys from regular surface world who just like to come down there and fuck with shit and become the king.
Just periodically got to go back through.
So you've got the character of David Innes, who's a huge part of... I think they even use the Gridley Wave Radio. We're a friend of Lord Greystoke, I believe it's Jason Gridley, if I'm not mistaken, figured out a way to have a... kind of Marconi up the... He created like a cell phone for the surface world to talk to Pellucidar.
Oh, yeah?
And I believe that that factored into the story as well, where they, you know, they find out through the wave radio. And if I'm not mistaken, Burroughs himself appears in the narrative, which, from the outset, Burroughs is very much a part of the Tarzan, and especially John Carter, the Warlord of Mars mythos, because John Carter is like an uncle, a distant uncle.
Yeah, he's writing it from the perspective of which I'm telling this story.
Yes, in fact, the very first Tarzan, I don't know if this is 100% accurate, but years ago I won a Trivial Pursuit question by simply guessing the only author I ever knew of who incorporated himself in his work, apparently was the first, was Edgar Rice Burroughs, who writes Tarzan from the standpoint of having been imparted this story and having no business sharing it.
Right, because it was, wasn't it essentially that he was telling a story, you know,
that someone else told him, who also had no business sharing the story. And so they're both lucky that Lord Greystoke didn't get all savage on them and come slit their throats.
Right.
So it's important to tell a flattering story if you're going to tell the tale out of school of a murderous animal man. But it does a really neat job. It may be a little ponderous. One review I read speaks to how I believe Walt Simonson is the author on that.
So.
Is trying very much to channel Burroughs' style. So if you're unaccustomed, it may be a little bit awkward for you.
But it's not. But the thing is, it's not Alien.
In which case, fuck
Predator.
You.
Right. It's not Alien versus Predator. It's Predator via a vehicle for a Edgar Rice Burroughs story.
Yeah, it's like if Edgar Rice Burroughs had written about the Predators coming to Earth, and apparently not being content with the Earth, they thought, hey, looky, there's an inside, too. We'll work our way out.
I wonder what's down there. Let's go Let's go do that.
They fell in a hole in Venezuela looking for Dutch. But it's also a period piece, because Tarzan takes place before and around World War I.
Right.
Or his exploits do. I don't think they tried to modernize it, if I remember correctly.
So we're establishing that...
And I'll tell you, for the record, nothing's worse than trying to modernize Tarzan and having him hang out with, like, oh, here are my jungle friends. There's a chimpanzee and a puma and an orangutan. Like, no, these animals are not indigenous to Africa except the chimpanzee. There's not a puma anywhere outside a zoo on the entire continent.
Oh, my God. All right. We need to wrap this up. We've been doing this for an hour.
Oh, my God.
I know.
This is HKC versus 60 Minutes. That damned hour wins every time.
It wins. The hour wins every single time, man. You cannot beat the hour. You
I fought the hour and the hour won.
But, you know, do you know how we beat the hour? We beat the hour by scheduling more hours every week for 2020. That's how we beat the hour.
Yeah, we are. I think this puts us full up on 2020, 2018, 2019, 2020. Last I looked, I have a story arc scheduled in January 2021.
Nice.
And I just announced to Andy a new story arc that spawned a second story arc right behind it, which will probably have to be out of necessity of a year or so apart, because there's so damned much else that was there before they got there.
That's true.
Oh, and speaking of story arcs, am I mistaken?
Start one, don't we?
Are we starting a new one?
I think
just
so.
Where is my thing? But I guess I should be plugging this up whilst looking for this. But
probably.
We need to be on the move. But we are coming to you from the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You can write to me, JCUMail@Yahoo.com. You can find us on various social media, which my co-host will now impart.
At HK Comics Show, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all of them. And they all link back to JediCole.com, to the Jedi Cole Universe, with various links to various shows. So you can get in there and get a ton of information.
Yes, and be sure and catch myself on the third Sunday of every month from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Central over at DallasOnAir.com for Isle of Toys, A-I-S-L-E, like a store aisle. And on the first and third Sundays of every month from 10:30 to 11:30 a.m. Central, also at DallasOnAir.com for the Rantcore Pit Live. Both shows are live streaming beginning at those times, and we do maintain archives of those as well. So be sure and check out our YouTube channel, The Rantcore Pit, and I'll eventually have something up for Isle of Toys. And also coming soon, more appearances at local conventions. I believe we'll be out at the Dallas Comic Con in August, late August.
That's fantastic, man. Normally.
I wanted to go down to this toy show in Austin. It's a great excuse to go to Austin. with apologies to Austin's Toy Fair. We'll actually be Dallas On Air will be set up doing live streaming of shows from the convention. And I'll be doing I'll be flying solo as my co-host Eddie Medina will be out of town, but I'll be there producing Isle of Toys and the Rantcore Pit live.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
And you can find out about those and other conventions in Texas at the Convention Awareness Project Texas at cap-tx.info. I haven't plugged that in a while, so.
You haven't.
I'm spent, and we will. Yes. Next week, we begin the family reunions arc.
We begin the IKEA. Yeah, we want to talk about some stuff to say. We got some stuff to say in the next, 5 weeks?
5 weeks straight through to the 14th of September.
Yeah, we got some words that need to be imparted over the next 5 or so weeks for show. All right, guys, stay tuned. We are heading into the last 20 issues before 300. I know.
Oh, also tomorrow, arriving via Amazon, my own personal copy of 300, so I can research our 300th episode.
That's fantastic. I think I still have it somewhere around here. It's going to be an ongoing battle that we are going to continue to have with the hour. So thank you for doing battle with us. We wouldn't do it without you. You guys are amazing. And join us next week for more Hey Kids Comics. Say goodnight, Cole.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.